This is Cut to It with Steve Smith Sr., a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
And I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut to It.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it. Cut to it.
We ask the questions you always want to know, but no one ever asks.
Let's cut to it.
I should know it's on. You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know. I should know it's on. It's on.
Did you just open a drink?
What's going on, Smitty?
How you doing? I'm excited for this one.
This is going to be a good one. Oh, so, yeah. Dan Campbell, recently hired as the Detroit Lions head coach. I want to play the audio of his press conference as he got introduced as the new head coach. And I want to get your reactions to this.
All right. And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off. All right. And we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down. All right. And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap. And we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing. All right. That's going to be the mentality.
I'm sorry. What's your reaction to that, man?
Let's break it down.
Shall we?
Yeah, let's go ahead. You start. You go with a line, and then I'll.
I mean, for me, number one,
What do you think he's trying to do?
You hear so many of these coaches, man. So many people are so quick to do all the rah-rah stuff, right? Like, we want to get people fired up. And and as someone who's participating in sports, I get that. Well, however,
well, I like what you said.
However,
someone who's participated in sport, just the way you said, I like that.
However, this is comical. It's funny, right? Like, you're talking about getting punched in the face and biting kneecaps off. Like, for me, this isn't something where I'm like, oh man, I can't wait to go and play for this guy. Like, this is not getting me going or making me want to say, oh man, I'm going to run through a wall for this guy. Personally, I'm not getting that.
Well, he stated the first time we get knocked out, we get knocked down.
This team is going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth, you'll punch us back, we're going to smile at you.
Okay, so
verbatim is what
he
just said.
So when we get hit in the face, we're going to smile.
That was line number one. You know, so we're going to.
So you done got hit.
We're going to kick you in the teeth.
Okay.
Not that we're going to hit you. We're going to kick you in the teeth.
Is that a roundhouse?
I didn't know we were playing M. I didn't know this was MMA.
Yeah.
Conor McGregor just got knocked out anyway.
Got that Nate Robinson.
Right. So we're going to kick you in the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
You punch us back. Mm.
So
you were prepared.
So he's already telling you you're gonna take that ass whooping.
So we're gonna kick, they're gonna punch. Pow. We're gonna smile. The hell?
I ain't smiling, dog.
I just got hit and I'm showing a mouthful of teeth.
I done punched a lot of folks. I ain't never seen a smile come out of one of them.
So let's continue.
Go ahead.
When you knock us down, we're gonna get up, and on the way up, we're gonna bite a kneecap off.
Street ball and the MMA. That's illegal.
Yeah, bite marks.
And I gotta see your tetanus shot records. Because, first of all,
you got rabies.
First of all, if you bite me, that's a problem.
Right.
But you also smiled when you got hit. So that should.
I'm fresh off a smile when I got punched in the mouth.
That should let you know. It ain't a lot upstairs.
Let's continue to decode this.
Okay. Bang! I hit you in the mouth.
I smile.
You smile. Then you roundhouse.
I'm knocked down, by the way.
You bang. Then you got hit.
On my way up.
Uh huh.
I'm gonna bite your kneecap off.
Mm.
All right. Then we're going to stand up, and it's gonna take two more shots to knock us down. So now you hit me twice. Bop, bop.
No, you got hit about four times.
This round I got hit. Yeah, in totality, yeah, I've been hit.
So
four
who
times.
Is he coach of?
The Detroit Lions.
Okay, maybe he's trying to play into the narrative of Detroit's a tough town, city.
I don't think people in Detroit go around. I don't think like getting punched in their face.
And they definitely ain't smiling. Not in winter.
I know in Detroit they'll punch you back. Several I know times. That for a fact. Yeah. They'll rob you too.
Yeah. And you ain't gonna smile getting robbed.
No.
Let me get your wallet. Okay.
And then to finish up, he said, and on the way up, we're gonna take your other kneecap.
Yeah.
And then we're gonna get up, and it's gonna take 3 shots to get us down. So now I just got punched in my face 3 times on top of the previous 5.
Can I jump in? Can I be honest and explain and maybe say why he's trying to emphasize a mentality that they have not been mm-hmm. for a long time. Detroit, tough.
Tough.
But Coach Campbell, mm-hmm. if you are trying to tell men, you're recruiting them yeah. to become come to the Detroit Lions, and you are advertising that we're going to get our ass kicked, but we're going to go down fighting.
We're going to be the last one standing. Yeah.
You know what I think of that kind of coaching, that type of rah-rah speech?
You big dummy.
Yes.
we're pulling this out the crate.
Man, why come in that sorry-ass team with that? Come on, man.
Coach Dan Campbell, you are a recipient of the Cut to It podcast Big Dummy Award.
Oh, no, you big dummy.
Yes, you know why?
Why is that?
Because he is trying to use words, and he is. Everybody knows Detroit is notorious for not really doing what they're supposed to do. That city is a great city. They mm-hmm. they rally around their sports
blue
teams.
Blue collar city.
Blue collar. But to come in and you know fresh off your Joseph A. Bank suit. Oh yeah, my chill factor is real low today. I'm coming in hot. There's a fastball right down the center.
Sell the Joseph A. Banks. Three button special. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And they got a
four.
And they got a COVID-19 sale too. COVID-19 yeah, he sale. Bought all of them, right. All 6 of them.
Right, fresh off the rack.
Fresh,
no
off,
Taylor.
None.
Just raw. I'm gonna throw this on.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Shoot, his uncle had to do the tie, and then right. Had some Buster Brown's
the
shoes
Buster with some pennies.
But then you do that, and then he's like, you could tell he's just grasping.
I think he got in that deep end,
yeah.
And he didn't know how to swim back out.
Didn't know.
Once he got in, he's like, all right, I got to we're going to get punched in the mouth. I'm going to get knocked down. I'm a bite. I got to show my toughness, so we're going to bite him back. Then I'm gonna get back up. So
you know what's going to happen?
You want to talk about resiliency? Like, I get it.
So after that, though, right. After that, what's the next storyline? We're going to let Matthew Stafford go to a new team.
Right.
What kind of coach was Coach Dan
Campbell?
Campbell. What kind of coach was he? What was he coaching prior to? Look it up. Let's look it up. We got time.
Tight ends coach.
Oh, okay. I'll let you know. I hate to say it this way. I'll probably be at a training camp or doing a game. Mm-hmm. Don't set your team up for failure before you on your first day of the job.
Yeah.
We've seen that before 4 years ago. Mm. When somebody got a job and they started making outlandish statements
yeah.
on the first day of the job. Get your feet wet, coach. Yeah. Understand the landscape of I understand he knows the landscape of the city, mm-hmm. but understand the landscape of your team. You make all those statements and then your quarterback, who's the future, can drop a dime pretty right. much anywhere on the field with a broken hand.
Statistical leader in passing with
and,
the Lions.
And you come out there, you could be tough all you want, but if you don't win, yeah. the speeches fall on deaf ears.
Yep.
Coach Cam, I think it's remarkable what you're attempting to do. But your coaching better be better than your weak-ass speeches because you're going to catch mold in a Coke and a smile.
Right.
You're going to be the next guy in Detroit and out of Detroit.
Yeah.
So, Coach, the next press conference you have.
I'm not Kenyan. You're a big dummy.
Just smile and wave. Smile and wave. Who we got?
We got CJ Sapong. It's a special 2-part episode.
I like CJ. I learned a lot. It was a great opportunity to talk to him because You know, I love to travel, but he gave us a part of his life. He gave us some things that aren't on National Geographic. They aren't on the Discovery Channel, the Travel Channel. They aren't in books. There are, it's about the real life history of CJ's history. And you may not like what you hear. You may not agree with it. But one thing you can't discredit is that's his story, and that's mm-hmm. his, and that's what he experienced, and his family has experienced. And I love the, we had the opportunity to go down CJ's story, and I hope you enjoy it. It's 2-part. We talked about a lot of different things, but one thing you can't overlook is what CJ and who CJ is, and how his family got here. Yep. So hope you enjoy it.
Let's get to it. The first thing we're going to get into is our Get Iced Up segment.
All right, you ready?
Let's go.
Okay, what childish things do you still do as an adult?
I continue to record myself dancing.
So like TikTok, or you just do it just to be?
I just do it for myself, just random. Random. Yeah.
Well, interesting. Yeah.
I know. I've seen a picture of you. You got to make sure that flash on then, huh?
Yeah. Hey, man. That's why I do it in the morning when the sun's coming up.
Just in case. That morning sun.
You do it in the evening. Hey, we got filters for that now.
Right? I mean, we don't know that. We both light skin, so I mean, we don't know.
I'm light skin. You're right. I don't know what you're talking about. All right, here we go.
Hey, but y'all be squinting like the flash is on, though.
Oh, now you trying to go there. Now you trying to go there. Everybody ain't got to make the Drake face, you know?
Here we go. All right.
Oh,
after you survive the apocalypse, what would your job be?
I would be a botanist, because I'm into the agriculture and all that. So, you know, I would make sure.
I don't know what that is. Explain that to me. As soon as you said it,
botanist. That's we'll just call it plant science.
Oh, okay. Right? Okay. Dumb that thing down for me.
Yeah. There we go.
Come up with the school. To play sports, with the school, and then happen to learn and happen to play sports. I was more on the sports in school. Yeah.
I feel that. Yep, plant science, man, that's my shit, and it's a good skill that I think, you know, even in this time, our community, if we are able to stay, you know, true to that, we won't be as reliant on, you know, all these other establishments, if you will.
Yeah, I like that. All right, this is the last one. What set of items could you buy that would make the cashier the most uncomfortable?
You know, I don't know, Steve, if this is in your wheelhouse, but mostly for me, it's some type of foot care products.
Oh, yeah.
You know, playing soccer, my feet get kind of beat up, so. You know, I'd be having the heel balm and the antifungals. You know, they kind of look at me a little sideways, but, it is what it is.
Always great until when I used to play, till you start back playing and then that foot come back in and take your socks off and everybody's looking around.
Mm-hmm. Can't wear sandals nowhere.
Nope. You look like you got ugly toes, too.
Well, I'm not going to lie. That's the genetics. I'm Ghanaian. My family's Ghanaian, so our feet are just built for terrain. You know, we built to traverse lands, and that's not a bad thing. You know, I've embraced it this time of my life.
Oh man,
traverse land feet. Right. Got it.
Yeah, there's so many places I can go right there. But
yeah, it may not be culturally relevant right now.
No, it'd get me in trouble. That's what it'd get me in trouble. So. Okay. Tell me, what's your full name and what does it mean?
Okay, my full name, Charles Nana Kwabna Sapong. And
run that back one more time.
One more game.
Yeah.
Run that back.
Yeah. So Charles Nana.
I got that one. Charles was here.
Charles, we wrote down. I've got that one. Charles, what was after this?
Yeah.
Charles, oh, God. Nana, I got two, because Nana is a nickname. for not, yeah. some of us. But
Nah.
I get that one. That's simple. Now here's where I get tricky.
Quabna. Quabna. That's K-W-A-B-E-N-A. And
Quabna.
That easy.
Quabna, yeah. And then obviously Sapong at the end. The Nana Quabna, those are my middle names. In my culture, my Ghanaian culture, the tribe that my family's a part of, you put Nana in front of a name when it's the firstborn. And then Quabna, again, with my tribe, we have a specific set of names dedicated to each day that has its own element of the earth that it signifies as well. And that's where Quabna comes in, born on a Tuesday, child of the earth. And then Sapong is my father's last name.
So you say child of the earth.
Yes.
You're talking about a study of plants. Is that intertwined with your tribe and with your heritage?
You know, I would say it's more of a genetic DNA thing that kind of just manifested itself throughout my life, because I never was into plants when I was younger. I hated vegetables, you know. But yes, our culture really believes that the name that you're given has an effect on who you become. So it's pretty interesting, I think.
Well, since you went there and softball pitched that for me, let me go ahead and hit that thing out of the park. Where are you from in a place you call home?
That's Ghana in West Africa. Yep. I know you guys are familiar, might not be, but I am Africa.
Familiar. I am familiar with Ghana. One of my best friends is a Ghanaian, and he is always bartering something.
See, you learn that early, especially if you grow up out there.
I grew up, so I took a missions trip, my first time ever going out of country, 2008. And I went with a group of guys, and we went to Togo Lome. And then we went to Nigeria. And you know where I'm going here, because Togo is a French colony. Mm-hmm. Nigeria is an English colony. Mm-hmm. Where do we have to stop to go to, because we're on a budget, obviously, a missions trip. So we had to stop in Ghana.
Oh, dope.
And we spent a few hours in Ghana. And it was really cool to see that, because I saw I got to see the homeland of one of my best friends, who we met in ninth grade. We're still friends to this day.
That's dope.
Right, to this day.
But that's day one.
But he also got me a Beckham jersey, but it cost me about five of my own jerseys just for that one Beckham jersey. Because I'm pretty sure he bartered one jersey for me and several jerseys for himself and other guys.
That's how it works, bro. Yeah, I be getting messages from cousins left and right to this day, man. You know, it is what it is. My fam, I guess, kind of going back to, the origin story. I have a large family. My grandfather was a chief of his tribe. And, you know, if you go back hundreds of years, Africa, rather, you know, it wasn't countries, right? It was tribes. And as Europeans came into Africa and infiltrated, a lot of the tribes dispersed. But my lineage is has ties to the Akan tribe, right? And they believe in, you know, expanding or spreading the seeds far and wide.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, exactly. So I have I had 33 uncles and aunts. Yeah, I got many, many, many of cousins. Man, I went wild story, actually. I when I went to Ghana when I was 21, you know, I went out there. I'm out in the club with about five of my cousins. You know, I'm dancing, feeling good. Out there, you can just carry the bottles all around the club. And I see this a check, you know, I'm like, oh, talking to my cousin, like, yo, who is that? Like, I'm trying to see what's up. Man's just like, yo, chill, that's your cousin. I'm like, oh, damn, all right. It's like that.
So they got bad kissing moves. Cousins in South Carolina, and they got kissing cousins in Ghana.
Yeah.
We have to take a break, and more than anything, we got to pay some bills.
Mm-hmm. Need that check.
I love Cut To It, and I love it even more when you download us and subscribe.
And you can follow us on social media too, Smitty.
Where at?
That's at Cut To It on Instagram.
What about Twitter?
At Cut To It.
Facebook?
Cut To It featuring Steve Smith Sr.
What about online?
And you can follow us at cuttoitpodcast.com, where you can buy merch and you can subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
I got all my answers I got all my questions answered.
That's what I'm here for, brother. Cuttoitpodcast.com.
Well, I remember that was one of the startling things is getting off the airport. This is back then. You get off the airport and they tell you, like sex trafficking, all that stuff. They do not play. It's signs up there. And then that was the first time I really realized how dangerous it was. Mm-hmm. Dudes had AK-47s.
Yep.
You get off the airport, and it's a small airport. So you get off, like, literally the tarmac right there. You get off and you walk in.
And they're there with them.
And they're right there. Now, they also tried to get me, too, flying out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they tried to get me. They had me go through a metal detector. But the metal detector was unplugged.
Oh, God.
And he was like, where's the American money? I'm like, man, I ain't got
it. Oh, yeah.
And he was holding my passport.
Wow.
And he said he wasn't giving me my passport. Man, I snatched my passport. Because I was on my way out, right? And I was on the road for like almost 2 weeks. I was ready to get home, right? This is 2007 or 8. Mm-hmm. So you had the constant rolling blackouts. At that time, I had a satellite phone because international plans weren't there. And I just was done. I was done taking a shower with a bucket, right? I stayed because we was on a mission trip.
In five-star accommodations.
I wasn't at no star accommodations, right? We had one time, what we had for breakfast, one egg, baguettes. This was in Togo, and tea.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, I didn't even eat my toast. I didn't even eat my egg. I gave it to somebody else, and I just ate a baguette.
Mm-hmm.
And I had unlimited tea.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was tough. And that's what I really noticed and really realized how big the world is and how small we are. But I also noticed that if America didn't have as much financial influence, bro, we wouldn't be here.
No.
Because there's so many more established, not even well off, but grimier countries that are just trying to stay afloat.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't even realize how lucky we have it here.
Yes, absolutely right.
And we get it twisted. We complain about being in line at a drive through.
It's
our own privilege, right? Yeah. I mean, that's a hot button take right now is privilege on either side. But yeah, we have our own privileges that we live in right now. So that's part of it.
So you talk about your tribe. What is it? Take us through what a tribe mentality is for family, because I hate the stereotype, but watching television, right? And I had to see it for myself. Watching television, hearing about Africa, hearing about stuff. If your only understanding is when they play Shaka Zulu every year in the States, right, is your perspective of Africa?
Short. Mm.
Man, your dumbass meter is up there.
Right.
It's about 25 on the scale of 1 through 5.
Yeah.
That's not really what Africa is about or what it stands for, right, or how it even stands on its own 2 feet with each country.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad that you said that because it's a that is a offshoot of the serious programming that we as Black people have gone through growing up in this country. But I'll save that for maybe later in this podcast. But when I talk about a tribe, right, it's better to envision your neighborhood growing up, right? You had, you know, old Uncle Timmy down the street. Maybe he was drinking a lot, but, you know, he always gave you a nice little bit of insight. You had your little homies that, you know, you knew where they lived. You rode your bikes there. You know, you ain't calling nobody. You ain't texting nobody. It's a tribe. A tribe is a communal group that it dictates its own, I won't say laws, but they each have their roles within that tribe. And it's set up so that tribe's capacity grows with every individual. Okay, this person does the sewing. This person grows the food. This person does the exports with other tribes and, you know, dealing with treaties to ensure, again, that the capacity of their community continues to expand with every individual. Now, the issue with that had happened in Africa is that when the white man came in and, you know, at first, obviously it's a land that they didn't know. So they kind of, you know, assimilated into the culture. They acted like they wanted to learn. They brought, you know, the different things from Europe that Africans didn't have. And slowly but surely, we got away from our own self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
So an interesting story with my particular tribe, with my grandfather, he had a situation where the Industrial Revolution was taking over Europe, and he essentially got exposed to the white man, you know, with industrial parts. And he moved from agriculture base with, you know, with rice, grains, and self-sufficiency to straight car parts, jet engines, like big factory type items. And while that actually helped us as a tribe, as a family, grow in our financial potential, like I said, it ripped us away from the things that we had known for generations. And down the road, it actually ended up causing a lot of rifts because, you know, as that British pound started going in circulation, as opposed to what you said, the old barter system, now the greed takes over, you know, and it's a really crazy story how, the programming of the white man kind of infiltrated my family's tribe. And to this day, we still have to deal with, you know, people going on land that we own and just European companies just building like premium homes. And, you know, it's not like out here where you can, you know, go to court or, you know, send some order. Like out there, it's like, yeah, if you want this, you better come and take it. And, you know, that leads to a lot of stuff. So
do you go back any?
Yeah, I was just back in January.
How is your family's tribe and land and all that stuff right now?
Yeah, so based off of, and this is interesting how it turned out. So because my grandfather made that move to industrialize, he actually ensured longevity within certain aspects of our family, right? Like I said, he had 33 kids. He had 5 wives. So the order, the hierarchical order.
Exhausted.
Yeah, right? The first, you know, my mother's family was lower on the in terms of the chain of hierarchical order. Mm-hmm. Essentially what happened was the firstborns, the secondborns from the other mothers, yeah, ended up just through greed losing everything. Wow. Whereas our family, because it was little by little by little by little, was very frugal, kind of kept, you know, the little bit of land here, the little lot there, the little house there. And we're able to slowly but surely build up to the point where now, man, when I go back, like, we living good. We're in the parts of Africa that you're not going to see on TV. You know, we still have family that chooses to live, you know, a more simple life that's, you know, more in the village. And, you know, it was cool for me to be able to just go back and forth from, like, literally living better than I live here in America to having to drive 2 hours up the mountain and, you know, hear the stories about walking 3 miles just to get water for the day, you know? So
is that real?
Oh, it's real, bro.
Is it real to, you know, walk in 3 hours to fetch water? And
it's real. You know, it is so real. Living and yeah, man, and it's kids too. You know, it's 5-6-year-olds that are doing this. And but you know what's wild to me? It brings perspective because they're doing it with a smile on their face, man. You know, you spend the first 5 hours of your day just to go to and from water, and then
water,
just to get water, bro. And I mean, that's water for bathing. That's water for cooking. That's water to drink. And I mean, these kids still do it with a smile on their face. And, you know, I would argue that they're still happier than people that I know. I play soccer with dudes that got money for days, but you know, they walk in the morning and you sense from their energy, like, damn dog, you're not happy. Like, yeah. It's wild.
Really growing up and being exposed to your tribe, how has that impacted you and shaped how you see the world today?
That's a great fucking question, bro. That's literally the reason I am who I am.
You just got us a real good rating. but here's what I love. Like the fact that you are talking about tribe. We do a segment called Deep Three. I've changed my three questions now based off what you said because I'm eating up everything that you're talking about, culture. You're talking about the stuff, just real talk.
And
I love
heritage.
I'm just going to tell you, I love to travel and I love the world, right? And this is a story that nobody really has heard. I remember I grew up in LA. I grew up poor and my grandma and grandpa built into me. And growing up in LA, they always, you know, I grew up in LA where a time where black and brown people were very dominant. And living in poverty, black and brown people are neck to neck, shoulder to shoulder, right? In LA. And my grandpa used to always say, if you're gonna come to this country, you need to speak our language. That was his stance on having some of the bilingual literature on buses, on billboards in our community. And I never really understood that. And then on the way back to the States, we stopped in Paris because we went through Togo. And so we stopped in Paris. And at that time, I didn't really know travel. I went through like a month process to get my passport. And I remember sitting there. And so I'm stopping in Paris and I'm with a buddy and no one's speaking English. And bro, my grandpa's words rang in my head. If you're going to be in our country, you got to speak our language. Mm-hmm. And it reminded me how small-minded I was and how I didn't go anywhere. And so I was and being a light-skinned dude, I had a lot of people talking to me because they thought
you mixed.
I was mixed. Yep. And so they were talking French to me. Brother's still figuring out English, right? So I was struggling. And I started to, and my wife took French, so she kind of was like, hey, babe, she recorded some words just to say for me. And as soon as they realized, just off the respect, if you attempt to speak their language, bro, this is a part that pissed me off even more. They speak 5 languages.
Yep.
Just different dialects.
Yes, you know, just the fact you attempt. Man, they busting the English, and I'm looking at them with them evil eyes like, you know, right? But one of the cool things is I was hearing my grandpa talk about other folks, but he was talking about me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he gave me that at that time. And it was really cool. And that's when I really started to, and I love traveling now. And with this virus, bro, when we start back traveling, hey, buckle up, buttercup, because
you're getting your miles back.
I'm getting my miles back. Plus, I want to see.
Reclaiming your miles.
I want to see everything because I don't know when the next time we will not be able to. And so, what I'm trying to say is, bro, you're allowing me to travel right now into Africa and all these different parts. So for me, I want to know what the tribe like was. Who is CJ, the soccer player that has now infiltrated the Cut to a Podcast?
Mm-hmm.
Give us an opportunity, brother. Take us on the Discovery Channel. hood version of really what it's like to play soccer, but also what this man who's experienced and from a tribe of 33 plus. And what do you bring to the table other than a nice jersey and a soccer ball and some grass and a net, right? Mm. Yellow and red cards, man. I don't care how many goals you make. I want to know about this man. I want to know about this tribe and what being from having the parents that you had, having the name that you had, and coming from the tribe that you've come from. What are you going to give us today that can really speak to these young men and women that are sitting here going, I'm not from Ghana, I'm not from Togo, but I'm from here, and I need to know, can I make it?
That's an amazing question, and I'm very glad that you asked that, because this is the shit that people need to hear these days, man. You know, I'm gonna start backwards, right?
I put my seatbelt on.
Hell yeah. So you were just talking about, you know, the indoctrination, if you will, that you went through with your grandfather, you know, saying, hey, if you don't be here, you need to speak English. I actually hear that a lot from people, you know, from here, friends, you know, acquaintances, what have you. But what I recognize through my African heritage, one, I didn't get to visit Africa. I visited Africa when I was 6, but I didn't remember much. It felt like it was poor land, right? It just seemed, it was so different than America, and I was very resistant to it. But definitely what I realized is here, the biggest thing that leads us to success, I believe, is perspective. I got perspective through the tribal culture that even though I didn't grow up in Ghana, was in my household, right? So out of those 33 kids, my mother's mom had 11 of them. 8 of them ended up within a 30-mile radius in fucking Northern Virginia. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when my mom was at work and, you know, it's my aunt that's watching me, or then it's my cousin that's watching me, and, you know, in African culture, well, Ghanaian culture, it don't matter who that kin is to you, they can beat you, right? So
that's mentality, yeah. That's North Carolina too.
I got my butt whooped by some folks.
Right.
You know,
you're missing a key part. How did y'all pick Ghana to Virginia? Like, how do you pick that? Because I have a friend here who does some stuff. And you might have heard him. His name Manny Ahome. He does Samaritan's feet, and they wash feet, wash children's feet, and they serve God. And he got a scholarship to, I believe, South Dakota State or North Dakota, some school.
I think it's South Dakota.
He got a basketball scholarship off a freaking brochure. He had never been to South Dakota. So that was the first time he saw snow.
Yeah.
So he got off the plane, and I'm trying to figure, and now he lives in North Carolina. So I know his story, but how are you guys picking Ghana to Virginia? Because that seems there's a lot of land between Ghana and Virginia.
Oh yeah. My mother, one, like I was saying, so one of 8 that is all sisters too. My mother actually came to Virginia because 2 of her sisters had come to Virginia simply because it was close to DC. They literally in Ghana was looking at a map and was like, oh yeah, that's the capital. We want to go close to there. Hmm. So, but my mom's 2 older sisters came to Northern Virginia about 20 minutes outside DC, literally sent her their passport. Well, they each used one passport. Like, my aunts look ridiculously alike, bro. It's kind of crazy. I know, right? That's how different it was, though. So my mom got to Virginia. She decided she wanted to be a nurse. She was stocking clothes at Ross while she was in nursing school. Well, we'll leave that right there for a second. All the while, my father had gotten a scholarship from his college in Ghana to do a master's program in Texas at Baylor University, computer science. So my dad, bless his heart, man, like, old scholar. You know, I'm not quite a scholar, but there are a lot of, you know, the, his qualities and characteristics that I've taken in my life that I think have really helped me to get to where I am today. So he graduated. Boom. First job he gets is at the Federal Reserve in Washington, D.C.
Oh.
So he moves to D.C. So my parents met each other here. They didn't even meet in Ghana. Yeah.
Because I was trying to figure that out, you know, and not step in the, you know, step in the ignorant bucket, right? And go, hey, were your parents, you know, arranged marriage, right?
Did they meet
there? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So like I said, man, this is discovery for me. It's Discovery Channel. I want to be able to ask you the dumb question, and it'd be okay that it's a dumb question, but there's not a lot of people I roll with or I know that's from a tribe, that tribe is in their DNA.
Just knowing that. Stuff.
Yes, just even, knowing that history.
Even because I would say on the other end of this table is
because this brother's from Lexington, North Carolina. But it ain't nothing. There's a lot of kissing cousins and all that. He would have kissed his cousin in the club.
No. But along that route, I can say that we did the whole Ancestry.com thing maybe in 08. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know my family's history at all. My mom did. And what we end up finding out is that my great, great, great grandmother, I believe, was a slave named Margaret that came from Africa. That's all I know. Mm-hmm. That's where my family stops. And so to hear this brother, CJ, talk about the tribes, Ghana, what's it like there? Like all this, I mentioned it before, heritage that he has.
Yeah,
I'm damn near jealous.
Super jealous.
Because
he knows his identity.
He knows his identity. And you picked Virginia to come from Ghana. Margaret was brought here through the slave trade, ported through Charleston, South Carolina, and we make land in Gaffney, South Carolina before coming to Lexington, North Carolina, but it's through the slave trade. So just being able to hear that type of history and that kind of heritage and that story, for me, I'm giddy because he knows the other side. My family stump starts in Charleston, but he has this rich heritage of tribes.
Deeply rooted.
So, man, I'm all in this.
And you being on our podcast, you're watering and making your roots even deeper because you know. I don't know exactly on both sides. My mom is one of 13.
Well, first I'll say, y'all are part of a tribe as well. You know, this might be a little controversial, but the tribal nature, the tribal culture is the reason why our people were pinpointed as, you know, profitable. The resilience, the strength, the courage, the connection that comes from a tribe is something that the white man saw and said, okay, boom, I'm going to use this for my profit. That's why they brought us here, you know. Agriculture, whether it's cotton, whether it's hemp, whether it's corn, we was the ones growing it because they didn't know how to, right? So they had us come here, set all the infrastructure up. They sat there, you know, yes, they threw the whip and they slowly but surely learn and just oppress us. And that's the reason why they went to such tactics, you know, in the slave times to really emasculate the men and desensitize the families because they realize the strength of the tribe. They realize the strength of the family, you know. And while it's sad and interesting enough, this allows me to kind of put a little point of emphasis on when I first got on the call because, you know, I answered and I said, oh, living the dream. And Stevie was like, man, this shit's a nightmare. And it is. I ain't going front. It is. However, when I look at that, and yes, it is, it does come from me having, you know, or being privy to the knowledge of my identity. When I hear all the atrocities that have happened to my people, when I go to Ghana and I see the castles that they set up along the coast to move my people across the water just so they could use them, you know, I realize why. It's because of the strength and the beauty within my DNA.
I think it's about that time. Just take a little breather.
Cut to it. Cut to it. Let's get down to it.
hey, mm-hmm. Gerard, where did you get that t-shirt?
You mean this thing?
Oh, yes.
I got it from cuttoitpodcast.com, where we have exclusive merchandise. Shout out to our guys at 704 Shop. But yeah, you can go on, buy you a t-shirt, subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
When you talk about castles on the coast, holding my people, dumb it down and simplify it to people who have, mm-hmm. you know, who've never been anywhere, who don't know what you're referring to, who have been living under a rock and, mm-hmm. and have no idea what you're talking about.
Hell yeah. All right. So picture this. I'm a 21-year-old African-American, fairly successful in America. He's going to his native land to learn and, you know, quite frankly, did not know what he was getting himself into. So I spend the first couple of days with the fam in the city, downtown, good vibes, all that.
So you live in, right now you've traveled to Ghana.
I traveled to Ghana. I'm in Accra, the capital.
So you living in you are living a fake life of your family history right now on their, on your home land.
Yes, exactly.
Not some homeland somebody told you, but you have lineage.
Actual homeland.
Homeland.
Pinpointed where they're from.
And you living in this fake life based on what you're about to go into.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Continue. I just had to make sure.
You got it. All right. So one of my cousins, had looked up
name?
A spot.
Name of the cousin?
Actually, his name is Kwabena. Oh,
what's his American name?
Cubby.
Okay,
Cubby.
See? Black folks always got a nickname.
Yeah, okay. Ghanaian, North Carolinian, you got a nickname somewhere, buddy.
You got a nickname, damn it.
Right.
Yo. So I told him, you know, I heard of this spot called Cape Coast. I saw some stuff on it was Wikipedia at that time. I want to check it out. He said, all right, bet. We'll go. I think 2 days later, we set up, because it's a trip. It's like 2 hours from the capital. Mm. So we set up our supplies. You know, we start driving. Within 30 minutes, the asphalt changes to dirt, you know.
Get certain, dusty.
Yeah, everything's getting dusty. There's certain areas of the road where you literally you can't drive more than 10 miles an hour or you will get stuck, you know. And I'm just on this, like, pilgrimage, if you will, man. And you know, 2 hours later, you start to see the water, the air starts, you know, smelling nice, smelling salty. But then I also, the first thing I notice is, damn, the Africans here is hella light skin. didn't think any.
Why are you judging me right now, dog?
You know, I didn't think anything of it at the time, bro. Like, I just remember, like, looking, I said, wow, this cat is light skin, boy. Like, all right.
When would you expect it? You weren't expecting to see someone out there light skin.
Nah, right? not even. But I learned later, you know, so we get to the coast and I think we were at the Portuguese castle. You get there and you're like, damn, like, okay, what's going on here? You know, I had known it was a European castle and it was there for the slave trade, but I hadn't. No idea what was in there. I had no idea, like, the history behind it, the shit that was going on in there. And so we get out, we literally cross a drawbridge into this shit. And I mean, I got hit, bro. I believe it's a DNA thing, right? I believe my people in my lineage, because they had to experience such trauma, like, in a way, it has passed down to me. Because I walk in this spot and I feel weak in the knees. I feel anxious, you know, and in every corner, you know, there's some bit of information, you know, letting you know, okay, this is where, for instance, where they held the slaves. Like, there was a dark line. It literally, it was up to around my hip, and I'm 6 foot tall. That's where the pee and the feces was stacked in the same room that they held the slaves. Mind you, this is their land, right? Europeans came on their boats. They didn't even go inland first. They started building right away, built the castle. Said, oh, hey, guys, we're here. We just want to learn. Like, you guys seem so cool. Like, hey, look, here's this. Like, it's from where we're from. What do you have? You know, and it talks about how slow and methodical they were in learning how to, they didn't know how to make rice, you know, they didn't know how to fucking be covered from the sun. Like, yeah, they could, you know, be in their dwellings, but whenever they try to leave, like, sunburn out the ass, we're giving them different types of herbs to help with that. While all along, they're setting up this castle, they got cannons on there to, that are facing the land, or facing the water and the land, just in case, you know, the convoy come for them or some shit. You know, I got to read the, and this is where the light skin thing comes in. They said it was wild how the masters, the white men, would just rampantly rape the women, and that they actually had a lot of anecdotal evidence that showed that these white men were lusting so much over the African women, like, were literally had an insatiable thirst for them, where they would go, they would every single day, yeah, every single day they would go into the quarters that they were holding them, and they would just pick out the litter, just pick each one every day, multiple times a day. Hence why all the people in this region are light skinned. I was like, oh, I get it now. I get it.
How are you feeling while you're experiencing all of this at the same time with that landscape of telling you that one of your 33 was possibly captured and raped? One of the 33's friends were captured and possibly raped and held captive against their will on the land that your family fought for, fought other tribes for, died for. Hell, there were men and women died out in the heat on, you know, serving and cultivating that land to be able to provide for their children for generations.
Yeah, man, that's the hardest part. It's like I said, it was super emotional from the jump. But I think the biggest one that got me was not just the way that they treated the women, but also learning that the tactics, right? Like, they would put tribes against each other, you know, tribes that were in prosperity for hundreds of years. And then, you know, I don't know if you understand the term false flag, but, like, yeah, you know, they'll get four or five of, you know, some men from one tribe and give them women, give them alcohol, let them shoot a gun and tell them, hey, now you're going to go do that to that tribe that you've been chilling with for the last 100 years. Wow. And, oh, yeah, if you don't, we're going to cut your nuts off, or we're going to go get your wife, or we're going to go get your daughter, you know, and like the way they... Because they were scared, like the white man. White man was still so scared of us that they weren't the ones, you know, pulling the trigger all the time. It was literally them brainwashing and coercing our own people to fight against each other. That one for me is the biggest one. And the anger and the hatred and obviously the triggers from, you know, the different type of racist, I won't say racist, but like moments of systemic injustice that I had already transpired by the time I was 21. It's like, it put me in a dark place for a while, for real. Mm. And I'm fortunate that I was able to use that as an opportunity to recognize, while, you know, as I did the deep dive into this history and this information, it gave me the opportunity to realize, well, hey, why else would they have done this? And it was for them, it was such a fear that, god damn, we sitting over where we're at thinking we running things, and then you come here and they don't have carriages, they don't have all the cool things we have, and yet they're prosperous. Yeah, if we don't get them right now, they gonna get us.
Talking about that dark place, how do you, after experiencing everything you experienced, 21 years old, you know, we skipped a lot, we'll go back to it, but how do you not become racist based off that small information that, and I say small because you just got a morsel of information, but it hit you like an earthquake because it was your, it's your family, and, yeah, and you get to see your history. How do you not walk around
bitter, resentful?
Yeah, resentful, and kind of, it's like, and the reason I say that is, you know, sometimes you go to movies when they were open, you see movies about history, and you walk out of there, and sometimes and
you're angry.
Yes,
just to the point, right? You get angry. You do. There's certain movies that are triggered.
Like you go, man, and they're say what? Based on,
yeah,
based on true story, based, yeah, on historical facts.
Mm-hmm.
And if you happen to be of that culture, yeah, you can't just walk out and go, "That was a great movie."
Yeah.
You go, man, that's some bull crap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how did it not sour your taste about people that were not of your descent, that were not, that were a lighter color skin than you?
Yeah, the short answer is it did it. It made me very bitter. It made me very racist for a little bit there. And I think it's a process. That's the thing, that even in this time now, we got to allow ourselves to heal from past trauma, man. Mm-hmm. We can't be sitting here like, oh, all of a sudden we gonna be above and beyond, you know, the trauma that's been, that our people have transpired for generational
trauma.
Yeah. Yeah, bro. So fortunately for me, I was able to find success through the sport I played, which allowed me to recognize that even in all the, you know, systemic issues that are out here, when I ball hard, y'all respect me. Now, that's not good by any means, but through that confidence, through that feeling of value, I was able to find, honestly, bro, it's swag. Like, that's something that Black people, we just got swag. We got energy, we got spice, we got sauce. And these are things that I think I used, and I really engulfed myself in that energy because I saw how uncomfortable it made people that are not my race. Yeah. And so that was my subtle FU to them, is I would walk down, you know, campus, a college with 4% Black people. I'll walk down, my headphones is on loud. Yes, I'm rapping Lil Wayne. And yes, I'm saying the curse words. And yes, my head is held high. Yes, I'm stopping and dancing. And they'll look like, oh, who is this? What is he doing? And like the fact that in a place where I'm 4%, that y'all, the 58 to 60 to 70% are getting uncomfortable, or the, you know, I'm the one of two Black guys in the party and y'all uncomfortable that I'm here, bet. Hell yeah, because I do have power over you. It's a mind thing at that point. And it obviously that was backed with the actual knowledge of my people and the identity that I had anytime I went home, and understandings of self-sufficiency and knowing that, okay, now I can be, I can walk around with my chest held high and not worry so much about how I'm viewed, because I don't need that job that only the white man could give me, right? I don't need that, and this goes to if I was to have, you know, my own self-sufficient type of agricultural setup. I don't need to hit Walmart every week to continue to give the white man money. You know, I know my people have this in my DNA. I know that I can learn these skills, these resources, this knowledge that I can then pass on to my family for generations to come.
We have to stop right there. CJ's story only gets more interesting. It was just so much in there, we had to break it up, trying to be respectful of your time.
Hold on. Steve, we heard about CJ's heritage.
Yes.
And what do you know about yours?
I know a lot. No, just quickly, my heritage is on my dad's side, Smith. We were a family born and raised in Louisiana. They were blacksmiths were slaves and were free, and went to Texas, and in Texas was forced back into slavery, and had to fight, became a Buffalo soldier, had to fight in the war, I believe the Civil War. And in that Civil War, we fought, became free. And then my family moved to Monterey, California, where my great-great-great-grandfather moved to Monterey, California, started several churches, started the NAACP of Monterey.
Wow.
Planted about four or five churches. My great-great-great-grandmother was considered the first lady, and my grandfather, great-great-grandfather, who was a Buffalo soldier, is actually in the, enshrined in the Smithsonian.
That is cool.
And so that's my history. On my dad's side, my family at the time, my family, some of my other family, they went actually to the property in Louisiana and toured the grounds, and it was really cool to see. And so we did a they got the experience to do it. I was in training camp, still playing at the time, but they went and back and went and toured the grounds and saw everything. And we did it. We did it as a family reunion. It was pretty cool. I got pictures and all that stuff, so it was really cool to get to experience it. And I still have the paperwork in my house, and I look back. And so that history was pretty awesome. And what was really cool about that is also in my family history is my boys, my generation, my kids, are all named after. So my oldest son, Peyton, my first name, Stevon, is his one of his middle names. Boston, his middle name is Gene, which is my wife's dad's middle name, which is my father-in-law's dad's first name. And then obviously Deuce is named after me. So we have started that every boy in our family with, you know, my three boys will be named not after me, but named after another man in our family that holds significance. My wife's father does hold some significance because he taught me how to tie a tie. He wasn't my father. My dad is in my life, but my dad taught me some things. My dad's name is Steven, and my name is Stevon. So just my boys know when they have boys that they are to name it after someone in our family of significance. Doesn't have to be me. Doesn't have to be my dad, but somebody else. So I think that's very unique and want to keep that tradition that I've started.
That's dope. That's dope.
Yeah.
Royalty in your DNA.
A little bit, a little bit. You are a unique person. You are well worth it. You are competent. And most of all, you're lovable. I'm Steve Smith Sr.
I'm Gerard Littlejohn.
And this is Cut To It.
Cut To It with Steve Smith Sr. That is me. Is a production of Cut To It LLC, Balto Creative Media, The Black Effect, and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From Cut To It, executive producer Steve Smith Sr., co-host Gerard Littlejohn, talent and booking manager Joe Fushi, social media team Wesley Robinson and John Show. From Balto Creative Media, Cut To It is produced by Brian Baltashevich and Meredith Carter, with production assistance by Alex Labreck. Production manager Sarah Pollock. Theme music by Alex Johnson. Lyrics and vocals by Anthony Hamilton.
You ain't heard about it, then we're about to let you know.
Cause you know it's on. It's on.